Hello, you're welcome to Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. 40 years ago, the education scene in Ireland was quite different to what it's like today. 1973 was the year when students sitting state exams no longer had to pass Irish in order to be awarded their intercertificate or leaving certificate. In March that year, Fine Gael's Richard Burke succeeded Fianna Fáil's Pádraig Faulkner as Minister for Education in March. The 1971 curriculum in primary schools was just 2 years into its implementation. Married men were on a different pay scale to single men and women and would remain so for 4 more years. The basic qualification for primary teaching would not receive degree status for another year. And third level access was available to only a small percentage of school leavers. It was in such an environment that the Computer Education Society of Ireland, or CESI, came into being. This week we look back on the history of that organisation. Who better to help us do that than someone who was present in those early days? I caught up with Elizabeth Oldham, a founder member of the Society, at the annual meeting of the Computer Education Society of Ireland earlier this year. Elizabeth Oldham is a mathematician and a mathematics educator from Trinity College Dublin, and she has a long-standing interest in technology and education. But what can she remember from those early days of CESI?
Quite a lot, in that I was around at the beginning, though I wasn't actually a founder member. I attended the very opening meeting, heavily disguised as Father Cyril Byrne, who was doing a master's degree in Trinity at the time on a language suitable for programming for young people. And so I had the privilege of actually being there when the society was launched in Galway, which is why we're in Galway again now, in January 1973.
What was it like back then?
Really exciting. CESI was always about education. People think of us maybe as techie, but the techiness was not the overriding thing at all. It was about education. It was about people who had visions for what education could be, for how our students could learn differently, for how they could learn different things, for how they could learn to live in the digital society that we didn't know to call that then, but that was coming, the different world.
What was the impetus for the society starting back then? Because as you say, it was a very different digital landscape than is there now.
Bless their hearts, the Department of Education. There was a stirring anyway. Individual people or small groups were beginning to teach programming and teach about computers informally or maybe in some more official courses as well. But the department organised programming courses in Fortran, one of the big computer languages of the day, for formula translation or formula translator. And it was held in Galway. Professor Bajpai, a professor from Loughborough University of Technology, from India himself, archetypally, came and taught at those courses. And it was from the course in 1971 and the second one in 1972 that the impetus came to found CESI. And a steering committee was set up and got it going. So it started then in 73.
And how many people were at the first meeting?
My mind's eye sees a room full of people. There might have been 30 or 40.
And what kind of computers would have been in schools, or would there have been any computers in schools?
Oh no, this was done with paper and pencil and a rubber for correcting one's mistakes and sending stuff off to be punched somewhere else if you were lucky. So there weren't any computers in schools. They came 3 or 4 years later, the first microcomputers, Motorola machines, or then the Apple and the PET first coming in.
And So the early days were just working on pencil and paper.
And indeed, we were looking from that point of view at programming, at computer studies, partly because of visions for education that included the problem solving of programming, the computational thinking, as we'd now say, probably, and also preparing people for living in the world where they needed to know realistically what computers could do and what they couldn't. From the beginning, we did talk about what computers could do in teaching and learning, but there were no instances that could actually be shown to people where we were at the time. Whereas one could program by writing things on a blackboard, a real black blackboard with a stick of chalk, not the VLE of that name, and say, checking them by hand, or if one was very lucky, getting the programs onto punch cards and running them in some commercial machine.
And were you in Trinity College at this time?
Yes, I was by that time. By autumn 73, I was. I was doing my M.Ed. In Trinity, so I was in as a graduate student over this period, 1971 to 1973.
And would there have been a computer in the university at that time?
Oh, yes. I believe the first one came in the early 60s, and then the IBM 360 came in the later 60s. Punch cards, and in a room where one couldn't go in, you could look at it through a window, it was kept free of dust and so forth.
And was Seymour Papert, I mean, he would be known for his development of Logo and Turtle Graphics. Was he around at this stage, the early 70s?
Not that we knew of. Now, I think he was, in fact, but it was 1980 when we began to get the vibes coming. He spoke at the International Congress on Mathematical Education in 1980. This is a really big conference held every 4 years, and he was a keynote speaker. And I have to admit that up to that, I hadn't heard of him, and I don't think I was the only one who hadn't heard of him. And I went to, was it to see a workshop, and unfortunately it wasn't running the afternoon I went, but I became aware of his name. And it would have been a couple of years later that Logo and the work associated with Logo really began making its impact in Ireland.
So if we characterise the 70s then and SESI as being about programming, albeit mostly without computers, by the time computers began to arrive in the school, those early Commodores and Amigas and BBCs and things like that, and those early Apples and Commodores and BBCs, how did that change the work of SESI then in the 80s?
It changed it quite a lot. There was the first impact of the little course that is still nominally available to people to do as the option in mathematics, a computer studies course, now, of course, with teachers able to write their own curricula for it because the material available is, let's say, just a tad dated. But suddenly, the 80s, to my mind, were about, first of all, we'd sown the wind, we were reaping the whirlwind, because suddenly everybody wanted to know about computers, to teach something to do with computers or with computers. So reaping the whirlwind, but also broadening the scope. Because, OK, for those who attended the SESI meet last night, in fact, Paddy Bates was talking wonderfully as ever about some of the work he did in the 1970s in primary schools. But the main stirrings at primary level came in the early 80s. So computer education was spreading across the age levels. It was spreading across the curriculum. And if I typified the curriculum at that stage with anything, it would be that delightfully quirky programme Granny's Garden, which some people are too young to remember, but I do see the interviewer smiling. And it went on living for a long time in other incarnations than on BBC computers. And round it, one could do so much cross-curricular, creative, innovative work, following up themes.
And for those people who are not familiar with the said Granny's Garden, Elizabeth, can you just give a brief summary of what it was?
Certainly. It was an adventure game. Therefore, there were various problem-solving situations set in a story. Granny's Garden was totally incidental because the first thing that the children who were supposed to be playing there did was to leave the garden, and they were going and trying to get the better of the Wicked Witch. And it being a gentle sort of a thing, not to give children nightmares, the witch didn't kill them, nor they the witch. They had to free the children of the six children of the king and queen. And so a benign sort of program. There were some in the same series that were very ecologically friendly. But there was room for so much work. Puppets, story writing, acting, triggered by the computer and the program on it. Not actually necessarily all the time with the students sitting at the computer.
And that was mostly primary school. What was computers in education like at post-primary and at university level in the 80s?
There were the programmes that were focused on, say, some programming, but that was becoming broader too. SESI was involved as having a delegate seat at a course committee, or syllabus committee it was then, in the 1980s for a junior cycle computer studies or information non-examined course, and made its contribution there. The tool programmes, the applications packages were emerging, and they would have begun to take the focus somewhat away from programming as such, and there was always the social impact of the computers in education. So turning more towards the beginning of the computer skills debate. And then also computing was spreading not only across the age levels and across the curriculum, but across the world, because we did have early email packages and SESI people were involved with some of those. At third level, to be honest, I wouldn't be so sure of what was being done in departments or schools of computer science. I think very mathematical things. I have an idea that in some cases students were carefully sheltered from meeting a computer for a while to get their heads away from the idea that this was all about hands-on and locating it more in mathematics and logic. But that may not be representative.
The next turning point then, Elizabeth, what was it?
Probably coming into the 1990s. And I find this a bit harder to characterise in terms of SESI's role, possibly adjusting the scope. Programming and computer studies were dropping below the horizon a bit at this point. They weren't fashionable, I venture to say. The debate was perhaps more what was the correct balance between computer skills and integration into the curriculum, rather than computers across the curriculum as it was designated. SESI was firmly behind integration at primary level and saw various roles for skill development, either incidentally or perhaps in the junior cycle of second level, a bit more formally for students who hadn't picked it up. And of course, the 1990s saw the coming of the web and the first browsers. And rather as with the adventure games, this was the cause of another burst of excitement. Email was in its way too, but this was wider spread. And perhaps also around this time, it's very difficult to see what was the unique SESI contribution, because people were wearing so many hats. The same people were popping up in SESI, on department committees, in university course development teams and so forth. So possibly policy in partnership. We always had some partnerships with the department, as I've perhaps indicated from earlier. We also had some confrontations. There was more formalised partnership from this point on through the 90s.
So the web is now established as, is well established in the 90s. How is that affecting what's happening at post-primary?
The use of it a lot, presumably mainly as a repository for information, for web quests, for students looking up their own information, following it up, hopefully thinking critically about it. It became there as a resource. It wasn't perhaps focused the same way as some of the computer packages, which would have promoted problem solving, programming, or that kind of wild creativity that would have typified the adventure games. It was an easily accessible source of information, or it provided such a source. Obviously, it was dynamic and exciting and relatively readily available. There were, of course, many problems in getting schools online and with any decent download speeds, naturally enough.
And then the next decade, as we moved into the new millennium.
I think I find this one in some ways even harder to characterise, certainly as regards SESI's role as opposed to what was happening in general. The range was maybe broadened with far more devices in use, handhelds, cameras, and animation programmes and so on and so forth, adjuncts to just using a computer.
And you had the whiteboard, the interactive whiteboard.
Coming in the middle of the decade, maybe particularly at primary level. There again, to some extent, replacing a use for things called blackboards, which some of us remember quite well, and maybe enhancing. How much it actually changed what was happening will have been, I'd say, very variable from school to school. In some cases, it was a replacement activity, but the students maybe liked it because it appeared modern and clean. And of course, there are many researched advantages of whiteboards as well. SESI personnel were involved with whiteboards, and in particular, we were partners to a project about whiteboards, the project that was based at Drumcondra, over quite a period of time, with some schools at both primary and post-primary level participating. So that was exciting too. And it was a stage when SESI itself began using the internet more in terms of communication and email among the committee and so on. We began practicing what we preached in terms of the way we could live our lives as a society involved with information technology in the information technology age.
From the heart of the city, 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
And if we come up to the present day then, where are we now?
In some ways it's that bit hard to see maybe, but we're keeping up the traditions. We were always a teacher support association crossed with a pressure group. We are still a teacher support association with our SESI list, of our email list and so forth. And we're very ready to be a pressure group at a drop of a hat, I can assure you. But, of course, what has really excited me is that we have gone back to our future, because suddenly programming has become fashionable again. I never lost heart. I thought it was very much the right thing for some students. It wasn't the panacea that maybe we had thought it was when we were young and idealistic and focused on developing a better world. There's one of those labels I've said now that no longer applies to me, whatever about the others. But suddenly the bottom-up emergence of the Coda Dojo movement, of programming or indeed computational thinking, SESI coming up to scratch is a way I've typified it in some ways. So we're linking back with that element in our past, where suddenly to think about how the computer works and how to be in charge of making it work is back on the agenda, alongside all the other things where ICT as a tool across the curriculum can be so exciting and so liberating and can be a catalyst for so much that goes on. And SESI, with its conferences and SESI meets and the SESI list and so on, I believe is remarkably at the cutting edge. I have met things through SESI that I only later met at international conferences.
Taking your helicopter view then, I get the impression that looking back over the 40 years and with a view to the future, you sound optimistic.
Yes, but then I am always a half full rather than a half empty person in terms of how the glass might be, I think. It's been slow. In the 70s, we didn't think that we would be still only at some of the stages we are now, but neither did we foresee some of the things that had happened. We would have thought that there was more built into the curriculum to do with the sort of technology we then envisaged. But what we didn't see was the coming of other technologies, such as the mobile phone, for example, with all the possibilities for handheld that it can now offer. You don't always foresee the future. So the excitement remains, slower than we'd wish in actually achieving things in some ways. But actually, when you look back over how excited we were to know that there were computers you could build with 2K of usable memory, and then one pulls one's smartphone out of the handbag and look at the contrast.
But also we've gone so far from, you know, I mean, only very specialised people could even consider building a computer now, whereas it was actually within a lot of people's reach at that back in the 70s.
It was, and some people took very much the, say, the techie and the computer logic route, and that was a very exciting one too. I had a colleague who was into it, so I had to feel that really it wasn't right for two of us to spend our time on it. But one day I'll set up my little electric railway system or whatever and program the signals. But that's a retirement activity, I think.
When you started, Elizabeth, you said that the focus was always on education.
Yes, and it still is.
And if you take the 40 years then, how would you assess what has happened in terms of how has technology interacted with education over that 40 years? And, you know, where are the strengths and where are the weaknesses and where is the future maybe?
I'd say it was always about types of learning and purposes of learning, I suppose, facilitating the different learners, as I said earlier. We have developed with regard to that as we have got a far broader range of programs, of environments, access to the internet and so forth. People who learn differently from others in many ways can be facilitated far more. The education system could change more to accommodate this. It's not one of the quickest things about changing, certainly, but then we know that educational change is slow. The problem-solving aspect has surfaced in general. The higher order thinking, the computational thinking, they've surfaced in different ways at intervals, but they're still there. And as I indicated, very much there at the moment and giving one of those buzzes of excitement again. So I suppose we do see a catalyst for learning in the times we live, where the students will see technology out there in the world. And if we don't have it in education, then education, school education, is not part of the world they know.
But if we go back to the talk that John Naughton gave this morning, would you have any concerns about, say, that wide world of technology that's out there, that very often people's engagement with it now is quite passive? And would that disappoint some of the founding members of SESI, do you think?
Probably would. Looking up Wikipedia isn't necessarily the most engaged of activities. But with every good thing one gets, there tends to be a flip side which isn't so good. So we get the difficulties of our successes and the successes in working through our difficulties. The handheld phone, quite apart from the little discipline difficulties of what they might be doing with it under the desk and texting their friends, can be a distraction. But on the other hand, I'd rather focus on all the projects that it can facilitate, especially with the various kinds of software that can be put on it, that every student could have his or her own device, powerful to help them focus on the kind of learning that is most relevant. It doesn't take away all the need for factual knowledge or procedural practice and fluency, but it does enable one to focus on some of those higher order objectives when that is the important thing to do.
You're also known, Elizabeth, as a mathematician, and you're well known for your research in maths education and so on. And it wasn't that unusual at the time for maths and computers to be kind of seen as hand in hand.
It wasn't, but SESI actually worked hard to try and counteract that. A number of us who were involved early on were maths teachers, but we tended to emphasise we weren't wearing our maths teacher hats when we were working with SESI. And when I was teaching students in Frebel College, for example, I'd say I only happened to look like their maths lecturer when I was doing the ICTs with them. Other places went more down the route of the mathematics. I remember going to a conference in England where the speaker in a large lecture theatre asked how many people in this room aren't maths teachers, and about three hands went up. Whereas right from the beginning we had a rather broader scope of teachers, and as I say, tending to de-emphasise their mathematical roots. The department did place the computer studies option in maths. I think this was partly because that was their way of thinking anyway, but it was partly also, and it's a shock to think of it now, for those who had done higher level intermediate certificate, as of course it was then, 1980, and were going to do ordinary leaving, they had time on their hands. It sounds so strange with pressure for points now, but there was a case of boredom. We've done this before. So there was a slot in a major curricular subject, if I'm allowed to pick out one as being major in terms of uptake, where there was time available, where the objectives for computer studies could be addressed. There is mathematical thinking, computational thinking. There is logic, but I believe some research did point also to a strong correlation between language and programming. So, say, the over-association with mathematics was perhaps unfortunate. It may have contributed to people not being able to see that we weren't techies who were interested in playing with our toys in education. We were people. And they were a great batch of people. They were wonderful people, some of those people I worked with over all the years, all 40 years of SESI. People who were having visions for education facilitated by technology.
We hear a lot about the difficulty of attracting young girls and women to enrol in either maths courses and also technology courses and programmes. You did that 40 years ago and over 40 years ago. Why do you think more maths and technology in general is not more attractive to girls and to women?
It's a difficult one. I grew up in a household jointly headed, shall I say, by an electrical engineer and somebody who should have been a maths teacher, only her father died when she was quite young and there wasn't money to go on to college. So I grew up in an environment where mathematics was a very natural part of it. There are questions about single-sex school, and yes, I did go to a single-sex secondary school where maybe there's more room to be yourself in some ways. Some people who know a lot about the research here might at this point jump up and shout me down, and I should be glad to be better informed if that's the case. For some girls, maybe the image is not the one they want to live out, but for some boys, maybe not either. it's a difficult one to take, but we have seen a change in balance over the years. And in some ways now, the problem that maybe is coming up more generally in education is in fact male underachievement rather than female underparticipation in STEM type subjects. We can see more than we used to, perhaps in terms of girls taking part in the STEM subjects. Yes, it could still be more. We need role models. We need a vision of the subject that shows all its aspects, so to speak, from the very pure intellectual through to the very human, without prejudice to which gender might be more drawn to which part of it.
And if we just finish up, Elizabeth, by thinking back to those, that first meeting that you attended of SESI, and if you could have seen ahead to 2013, what do you think would have been said?
On some of the developments, wow. On some, oh, are we still only this far along the line? But it was a time of great hope and excitement.
In the course of our interview, Elizabeth mentioned that there has been a new interest in computer programming these days, and one device that is useful in that regard is the Raspberry Pi, which is a credit card sized single board computer developed in the UK by the Raspberry Pi, that's PI Foundation. And the idea is to promote the teaching of basic computer science in schools. John Naughton told me a little bit more about it.
These kids had been growing up with things like iPhones, iPods, smartphones, which are all perfectly packaged little computers, but they have no user accessible parts. And so so they weren't programming. They were using KIT, but not actually creating stuff. And the academics in Cambridge said, OK, well, supposing we could design a really cheap machine that we could give to every kid who came on an open day. And they set about the design enterprise. And because they're smart and they had access to some very interesting companies and so on, they were able to do it.
And despite only being launched in 2012, over 1 million of the Raspberry Pis have been sold already. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guests this week, Elizabeth Oldham and John Naughton. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.